Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You're here at the Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. Each and every week we have Tony. How you going, Tony?
I'm not too bad, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, good, mate, good. And Schwinn, you're with us too, mate. How are you, buddy?
Very well. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate, good. And if you're looking to follow Tony, you can get him at the Clock and Talk, and you'll get Schwinn at AFC Schwinn, S-C-H-W-I-N-N. Is that right, Schwinn?
Yes, sir.
No worries. And I'm Tez. You can get me at Tezza. You can work out the spelling of that. But anyway, let's get into it, boys. Fuck, what a game, eh? 5-1 over Everton. And what was your take on it, Tony? Just let's start with the lineup, because there was a few wondering why Lacazette was left out on the bench and Iwobi started. But yeah, what was your take on the starting lineup, mate?
I think when it initially came through, there was a bit of shock that one, Jack wasn't starting, and two, that Iwobi was. I saw a lot of a meltdown on Twitter that why is Iwobi starting and Jack isn't, but it's never either or, that they don't play in the same position. Wenger decided he wanted to play a 4-2-3-1 system. And in that, we're severely struggling on the left. I know Iwobi isn't a change, but he's mainly played on the left of the three behind the striker. And we don't really have anyone else that can play there and say it's their natural position. Yeah. When you look at it, it's not that surprising. I mean, we always moan when Wenger plays people out of position. And I can 100% guarantee you, all the people that are moaning that Lacazette didn't play, if he would have played on the left wing, they would have gone, oh, Wenger's doing it again, playing people out of position, he'll be left back next week, blah, blah, blah. So, in a way, he's played players in their natural position and still gets criticised for it. I guess it was an initial shock seeing Iwobi's name over bigger names. But when you look at the system, it would have been, as I said, say you bring Jack in for Iwobi, then where does he play? And does that mean you shift Ozil out wide, which you never really want to do if you don't have to? So I think it somewhat made sense. I don't think he'll do the same against Tottenham away, because it's away and it's a much better team. But we'll get onto that later. But I think the selection made sense, really.
It was always going to be a headache. We knew that, didn't we?
Yeah, we're very short in the wide attacking positions. As like, you wouldn't really class Iwobi as a wide player. You wouldn't really class Mkhitaryan as a wide player. I don't actually think we have any. I think Reece Nelson, who barely played a Premier League minute, if he has played any, is the closest we have to an actual wide man. So that shows that we're not really we're playing wide men anymore. We're playing them sort of, I don't know, false number 10 is probably a better way of putting it, that Iwobi and Mkhitaryan are, that they can do a job wide, but they're going to drift all over the place and pop up in unexpected areas.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, what was your take lineup, mate?
Definitely surprised to see Aubameyang in there. I did not expect him to start. I mean, there were reports about how he was ill, and that's probably why he missed his hearing in Germany on Monday before completing his transfer. And knowing Wenger, we know that he usually likes to, ease people into the squad. I thought he would do something similar as he did with Mkhitaryan against Swansea. But he seemed ready, and of course, we'll talk about the goal he scored, which was absolutely sublime. But I think Iwobi was chosen, as Tony said, for his positional, not playing someone in a different position. Jack, we know, is still suffering from a little bit bout of illness, so no surprises for Jack being left out, just to be safe. We've seen Arsene being a little safer in terms of, putting players into the lineup. Ramsey has been brought in back from injury slowly, and I think we saw benefits of that yesterday. He looked absolutely fresh, absolutely rejuvenated. His batteries were charged, unlike Swansea. So I think, we've been more careful about that. And considering the result we bagged yesterday, I don't think there can be any arguments against the lineup.
Yeah, no, I think he hit the nail on the head. And I know Levan Lacazette was always on the bench, was always going to raise a few eyebrows. But I tell you what, boys, I'm fucking excited. How good was, and I don't want to get too in front of ourselves here, but Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, how good are they looking, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, you can see they've played together, just that natural one of them moves and the other one finds it. Even when the balls weren't going, like if it was getting cut out or slightly over hit or slightly under hit, you could see that they were, they sort of naturally knew where each other were going to run. Like, I don't think with Mkhitaryan's run for the first goal, when he sort of crossed over and went wide and then played the cross into Ramsey and Aubameyang found him, I think where our other players have not had much time with Mkhitaryan, I don't think they would have found that run. And it looks like a basic ball. It wasn't the hardest ball from Aubameyang, but it was just knowing where Mkhitaryan was going to run. Because he made quite a strange run, something that you probably wouldn't see Ozil doing. Who, and if you look at, say, Lacazette, or I know he's gone now, but Giroud, they would know the type of movements Ozil make, but not what Mkhitaryan makes. Whereas Aubameyang, obviously, he knows the types of movements that Mkhitaryan's likely to make. So you could see they had a natural... They knew what each other were going to do, which is always helpful. Aubameyang looked dangerous at pretty much all times. His pace frightened Everton. He's very clever with his movement. He's one of them that I could imagine if we're having a bad day and we get beat, people will criticise him for not doing enough because he's very basic. He plays pretty much within the width of the area most of the time. He's very basic. Like, there was one time in the second half, the ball came into him in the centre circle and he just laid it back and spun and run. And the defenders were so scared of him running in behind that they had to drop 5-10 yards, which gives everyone else more time. But it is basic. So on a day that it's not a criticism at all. I think it's very good, but I can see it being a problem on a day that doesn't go too well. But we've got to accept that good times come with bad. But it was very dangerous. I looked at a heat map yesterday, and it was pretty much exclusively in the, as said, within the width of the area. And he actually barely touched the ball. I don't know if it was right, but the heat map said I think it was 29 instances when he touched the ball, which is ridiculously low, really. But
I've got it in front of me at 25, it's saying on here, but I don't know how correct that is, like you said.
Well, I would rather that, but he had 25 where he looked dangerous rather than 60 if he's dropping short and just laying the ball back and not a threat. So you can see what I mean about the criticism going to come in. If we lose a game 2-0 and he's only had 25 touches, people are going to go, you paid 60 million for a guy that doesn't get involved in the game. So you're going to have to accept the strengths with the positives with the negatives. But he is that type of player where he's not involved in the game much. Everything he does is explosive and trying to go towards goal. But, I mean, you think, as I said, it's basic, but of them, say, 25 instances where he touched the ball, one, it was in the middle of the area when he played it wide to Mkhitaryan for the first goal. He obviously scored. He had that run through on goal where Pickford saved it. So that's over 10% of the instances when he touched the ball being extremely dangerous. One, two leading to a goal, and one leading to a chance where he probably should have scored.
I'm just looking, before we get into these goals, now have a look at the heat map, guys, and check it out. And I know it's not the best comparison, but Lacazette, we shared the Lacazette one last week, and you have a look at Lacazette's positioning to Aubameyang's positioning, and that's what I can see just right there on the heat map is the difference between the two players. I don't want to take anything away from Lacazette, but Aubameyang for me is got to be the striker that we got to have each and every week. Schwinn, what's your thoughts on the Aubameyang, mate? What was, playing his first debut yesterday, first game back in an Arsenal jersey.
I think Arsenal fans just got reminded what it's like having a striker that is a striker and not essentially an involved forward, as Lacazette has turned out to be. I mean, Giroud was always good at finding spaces, but he never had the pace that Aubameyang has. And Lacazette, whether it's because of confidence or whether that's his playing style, likes to get more involved in the game, as Tony said. He likes to drop deeper and stitch up some play with his teammates, and he wants runners from the middle of the park. That's where Aaron Ramsey excelled in the first half of the season, because Lacazette would empty spaces and Ramsey would make those late runs into those spaces. But as Tony said, if this is a trailer for how Aubameyang is going to play, it's fine, because he doesn't need to be involved. There were times where he would drop deep and he would put in a tackle, and then he would just go back up and stand in the shoulder of the last defender. Very threatening, always looking to get in behind. not hungry for the, you know, not greedy for the ball, happy to have Mesut Ozil and Mkhitaryan and Aaron Ramsey playing those balls behind. I mean, there was an instance early on in the, well, sometime in the first half where Ozil released him, and I think the Emirates faithful had their mouth, were hoping that would go in, but I think it got saved by Pickford. But I think the prospects are bright. If this is Aubameyang not at 100%, then I think we have something truly special on our hands, despite his age, because 3 years of goal scoring, if that's what he's going to bring, then by all means. But I want to talk more about Mkhitaryan, because, I mean, I have a soft spot for creative midfielders, and I think yesterday, more than anything, Mkhitaryan proved that he was a victim at Man United. And to see him blossom and to flourish the way he did, he was spectacular. I mean,
oh, absolutely brilliant, wasn't he? Like, what did he get? Got three assists, and the first goal he assisted Ramsey in the 6th minute. He just seemed to be playing without pressure. Or I don't know what Jose does over there at Manchester United, but Mkhitaryan really seemed to enjoy his football at Arsenal yesterday.
Yeah, he was expressive. He was free, as you said. You know, he was not shackled by other responsibilities. And I mean, Arsene's very good at that. You know, he doesn't give you too much to do that doesn't suit you. He lets you, you know, explore and basically work on your strengths. I mean, that can be a problem, but I think even defensively, yesterday he made Hector Bellerin look better because he was tracking back and he was able to help him out. That was something that Bellerin was struggling from otherwise, because he had no support down the right-hand channel. So that helped. I did not realize how quick Mkhitaryan was. He's really pacey. He's got those afterburners that when he's chasing after a ball, he can get a step on you, which was a very pleasant surprise. But a hat trick of assists. I mean, even against a poor team like Everton, who, you know, have been struggling for the last few weeks, that's very good for, you know, any Premier League game. It doesn't matter who the opposition is at that level. And I think we have a strong case for challenging for the top four if something like this continues, because Henrik Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang provide this new dimension altogether in terms of attacking threat. And again, if yesterday was a trailer, then sign me up for, you know, for the full movie.
Oh, mate, we're exciting times ahead. And I tweeted it earlier. I'm really looking forward to the end of this season. There was the second goal in the 14th minute, Tony. Now, just going back before that second goal, because Ozil did that. There was a set piece with the Ozil corner. Did anyone take notice the Xhaka corner on the other side a couple of minutes prior to it? And, oh, geez, as soon as that ball went in, I thought, and I know, yeah, okay, I'm a Xhaka fan, but that ball was fucking there for goal.
Well, there was that, and then there was the one later on in the game where Monreal hit the post. He put some corners into some very good areas yesterday. It's obviously come out this week. Ozil said himself that he's never known a manager spend as much time on set pieces as Wenger. So it kind of nullifies the we never score from set pieces, or we don't focus on set pieces argument that some fans have. And if you look, for quite a small team, our set piece record isn't bad, like scoring wise. We score from a lot of set pieces considering size.
Well, we're the highest scoring team from set pieces this season.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. And they're not direct free kicks, because off the top of my head, I don't think we scored a free kick this season. Oh, Sanchez at West Brom. So we got one. So they are from like crosses into the box. So good delivery. To be honest, the goal was so well rehearsed. Like, you could see it coming. Mustafi made a brilliant run to the front post. And even before Ozil would kick the ball, like I said, Mustafi front post, like, because I just saw the run he'd made, he was going to be free. That said, it is awful defending by Everton. I don't want to take any gloss off us, but they had three lined up with Koscielny, Mustafi and Aubameyang. They had their three centre-backs, and all three of them ended up free. Mustafi wins a free header, then Koscielny taps in unmarked, and if he doesn't get there, Aubameyang taps in unmarked. So it was well rehearsed. I'd imagine Mustafi was probably going for goal, but you know, if you get it towards the back post, then you've got half a chance of someone being there if it doesn't go in. So, like, well done, well rehearsed, good delivery, good run from Mustafi, good run from the two players peeling off at the back post. But had that gone in against us, I'd be absolutely fuming.
Mm-hmm. So, Schwinn, the third goal, assist by Wobi to Ramsey, mate, in the 19th minute. Wobi had a really good game. You know, we've been critical of Wobi in the past, but I thought he was right up there with the rest of them. He had a really good game.
Yeah, do the simple things right, right? I mean, he's sort of like Theo Walcott in that regard, that if he has to think too much, then he'll probably make a mistake. And yesterday, his positioning and his, you know, where he was in transitions was very good, because someone would collect the ball from an Everton player and just give it to him, and he would make a quick pass and just run like he's never seen the end of the earth, and, you know, just try and get into the box. And us flooding bodies forward gave us more options, and we were more fluid. We were very interchangeable yesterday. I mean, it's hard to really say that we played a definite formation with definite players. You know, it was all very fluid, and he did the simple things right. I think it was one of his better games in an Arsenal shirt. But again, nothing to stand out. Nothing, you know, I mean, there was no shot that he took that put the Emirates on its feet. But sometimes you don't need that. When you have all these quality players in front of you and alongside you, you don't necessarily need to, you know, try. But I would like to see him attempt more. You know, his shooting is not quite up there. A couple of games before, he's tried a few shots and, you know, they've been wayward. And I want to see him develop that part of his game. But again, nothing to be taken away from him. I think he had a very solid game, just like most of our players. Well, just like all of our players yesterday, I would say. Mm-hmm. And he was an essential part of the team in many regards, as Tony said, because no one really plays that position. And the only one who would is probably Welbeck, and he better stay away from this team as far as he can.
And then the one everybody was waiting for, Tony, come in the 37th minute, assist by Mkhitaryan to Aubameyang. And I just look at that, I've watched that finish, and once again, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but I don't want to criticise Lacazette, but if Lacazette was in that position, would he have scored that goal?
To be honest, I think that chance, one is bound of his movement was very good to spin in and out. But the finish, he's made it look very good. And he does that a lot. He waits for the keeper. He waits so long for the keeper to sit down. He knows the keeper's going to go down at some point, and then just lifts it over them. And obviously, Joseph, who was on our last podcast from Dortmund America, pretty much said the same. And it's what I've seen when I've watched Aubameyang, that he just waits so long and the keeper goes down, he just lifts it over him. It doesn't have to be a particularly good chip. But I think that's what's got the headlines. I think the chance was, I would expect Lacazette to score that, as I would expect the majority of strikers to score that.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, he's done it in style, which makes it more memorable. But had he, I'd expect in a different way. But yes, I'd expect Lacazette to score that. I'd expect it to be lashed in. You can't be any top draw striker shouldn't be missing from 10 to 12 yards out with a 1-on-1 where they're not challenged at all. So it's not like you've got someone leaning on you and off balance you. You've literally got the freedom to do whatever you want. Aubameyang could have gone round him. He had so many options. So. Yeah, I mean, my issue with Lacazette is he probably wouldn't have been in that position, but once you put him in that position, yeah, I'd expect him to score. We can't gloss over, and I know I got called Mr. Negative after last week's podcast, but we can't gloss over that it was definitely offside. But again, you make them runs, and sometimes you get away with it. If you don't make the runs, then you're never going to be in that position. So, fair play on making the run. Great finish, great goal, lifted the roof off the Emirates. Buzzing that he got off the mark in an Arsenal shirt. All round, you can't really moan about it. Said again, it showed the link between Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang again as well. And also, I don't know, watch it again. You may have spotted this when you watched it.
I've watched it about five times.
Well, as soon as Mkhitaryan put him through, he ran off celebrating. He ran literally the complete opposite way. And Aubameyang went round the goal to celebrate with him. But Mkhitaryan didn't hang about, like, looking to see if it would go in. It was like he knew.
He just knew, yeah. Yeah. Unreal. Okay, so the 46th minute, Monreal comes off. Have we got a little update, Tony, on Monreal? Do we know what that was all about?
Well, when he hit the post from the corner and then he had a shot blocked just after, he went down for a bit. Didn't get the physio on or anything, but he went down for a bit. So then when he came on at half time, came off at half time, I thought it might be that. They wouldn't have shown it on TV, but literally as the players went into the tunnel for the half time, Kolasinac came out in his kit. So everyone in the ground knew that sub was being made. Obviously, we didn't know why. But I think Wenger said after the game it was just sickness. He didn't feel 100%. Again, at 4-0, the game's done. So similar to Palace in that it's probably more precautionary and he probably could have stayed on if needed.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's any form of doubt for next week or anything. But if there has been a sickness bug going around, if Aubameyang's been ill, Jack's been ill, you don't know if he's just caught a bit of that.
Yeah. And then the 70th minute, Cech come off, Ospina went on. What was it?
Yeah, on so, Cech, or? I think he got a knock to the calf when the ass hit the post. I think he was only he was staying on because I think he thought he was going to get a 200th clean sheet. And then as soon as that didn't happen, he came off. By all accounts, it's not a muscular injury in terms of he's not pulled a muscle. It's just a kick, which is probably just bruising, a bit stiff, but shouldn't be any issue there, really.
Okay. And then Schwinn in the 74th minute, Mike Mkhitaryan to Ramsey to complete his hat-trick.
A hat-trick of assists and a hat-trick of goals.
Yeah.
I mean, not much you can really say more than that stat. I think it really shows the fluidity, as I was talking about, and how interchangeable we were. I mean, just watching the game, I think even if the scoreline was nowhere as flattering as it was, right? I mean, it didn't look like Mkhitaryan in particular is a new addition. I mean, it was so comforting to watch all these players play together, because it usually takes time to embed yourself into a new squad. But Mkhitaryan's connection with Ramsey and, again, with Iwobi, I think was solid. I mean, you expect Mesut Ozil to be able to tailor his game in order to accommodate someone else, right? But I thought we saw something similar from Mkhitaryan, where his intelligence really showed on the pitch, because he was able to understand how Iwobi likes to play and what makes Aaron Ramsey, those late runs. And every time he found himself on either flank, he would pick his head up and he would look for that minus ball for Aaron Ramsey, because he knew Ramsey's gonna try and make that late run. I mean, I think someone said many years ago that Dennis Bergkamp used to play the pass into the space where he thought you should be. And I think yesterday that hat trick of assists could argue was very Dennis Bergkamp-esque, because he knew exactly where the defenders won't be and where Aaron Ramsey would be. And that's another reason why Aaron Ramsey is so underrated. I think Mkhitaryan and Ramsey can really strengthen our midfield and goals from midfield. And that's something that we've been lacking. Another threat. Ramsey's never been supplied in that regular fashion. And I think that's something that can really give us that extra edge.
Yeah. Can I just make a point before we carry on? Again, I don't know if this is shown on TV, so you may already know. But they had a corner at 4-1 and Jack was ready to come on and Ramsey walked to the sideline and Wenger said, no, stay on and defend the corner. I don't want to make a change when we're defending the corner. And the next time the ball went out was when Ramsey scored. So he came off just after he scored. But he actually thought he was coming off about 2 minutes before and even walked to the sideline to come off.
Wow. So 2 minutes completed his hat-trick. And that's his first hat-trick for Arsenal?
Yep.
There you go. And then Ramsey came off, Jack went on. Do we know why Jack, is he a little bit sick still? Or?
He missed Swansea through illness, he didn't even travel. He's trained, so I don't know whether he just felt that Ramsey was fresher and in a better position to start that game.
Mm.
Who knows? Maybe he's still feeling some effects of being ill. No idea. But
yeah.
You can't argue with a selection.
Yeah, no, it was. He got everything right as far as I'm concerned. My only worry was towards the back end of the second half. Everton got that one goal. Cech missed out on his clean sheet. We still have, it was a brilliant win, but we still have a little bit of problems in that defence, don't we?
Yeah, I'll say this every single week, and people get bored of me saying it. We're just not set up to defend. it means at times we will score goals and score a number of goals like we did yesterday and like we did against Palace, but it also means on the flip side that when that attacking unit isn't quite working, we'll have results like we did against Swansea. And look, teams will always have a chance against us. I think it was awful defended by Kolasinac for the goal. I don't know what he's trying to do. I mean, he may not. Calvert-Lewin's a big boy, and he might have beat him in the air had he jumped and tried to just win it. But I don't. He's just like ducked out of it. It was weird. But yeah, we're just not set up to defend. We're always going to leave space. Obviously, by the time they scored, they'd already hit the post as well. I mean, we had stopped. I think at half time, we just thought the game's done. We'll conserve our energy, try and make sure no one gets injured, and keep us all ready for next week. Mm. So that does play a part in it as well. But yeah, we're just not set up to defend, and there's always going to be open spaces against us.
Now, the tough question, boys. I'll go to Schwinn for this first. Who was your man of the match?
Oh, wow, so many candidates. I mean, Aaron Ramsey, of course, is up there. My goal would be Mkhitaryan, just because of, you know, everything that made this his game. The assist, his home debut, sharing that space with Aubameyang in terms of home debuts. Granit Xhaka for all the shit he's been getting, and deservedly so, over the past few weeks.
Don't jump
had
the gun.
Had a fantastic game.
Don't jump the gun yet, Schwinn. We will get to that.
I mean, he deserves a shout-out, though, in this conversation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think I'll have to go with Mkhitaryan, just because of how impressive he was and because of how much of a team player he was. I think we've been... Our eyes have been so tuned to expect the number seven at our club to... just to throw tantrums and not really be a part of the team. And yesterday that changed all of it, you know. Mm. I was not anxious that, okay, the ball's going to be driven across the field and counterattack and goal. That's not going to happen anymore. Mm. And that was very comforting to see as an Arsenal player. So I'll give my gentleman's nod to Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Okay. Tony?
I'd imagine Ramsey got it on TV and whatnot because he got a hat trick, but for me, it's Mkhitaryan by a distance.
Yeah, I agree with you, boys. Mkhitaryan, but you know, not taking anything away from Ramsey. Ramsey did get it on TV, so. I just apologise to a couple of our listeners. We're absolutely getting a fucking hammer in here of rain, so. If I am coming through a little bit softer, lads, it's because it's pissing down rain. So, but anyway, we will digress and we'll move on. Now, I just wanted to make a point, boys. There was a lot of shit going around with Xhaka after the Swansea game. Now, I'm not blaming our followers because we have good followers, good listeners, so I'm not pointing this at you guys. Look, as an Arsenal fan, we all love the club, we all love Arsenal. Be critical of a fucking player. Do not send a player death threats, because I think that's just below the belt. What it actually does to a player's mindset, I know, yes, he's paid a fortune and you've got the fucking shits, you know, because he didn't have a good game. But does that give you the right to fucking send him death threats? And to a point where he's actually got to turn his comments off. Did you catch up with it, Tony?
So I didn't see any of the initial comments. I've seen loads of reports saying that he had to disable comments due to receiving death threats and threats against his family, which is a joke. Like, essentially, if you used to take out the football out of it, the headline would be, guy doesn't do job very well one day. And when you just think of it rationally like that, look, I'm not saying there's pretty much anything that deserves death threats, but when you say, guy has bad day at work, is that death threat worthy? For me, no, of course not. I mean, again, like coming back to the football, it's just he's our boo boy at the moment. When he does stuff well, it's just like, oh, well, he's supposed to do that. And then when he makes a mistake, no matter how minor, he may overhit a 60-yard ball. And it's, oh, him again. That has gone one step too far, more than one step too far in terms of death threats and whatnot. But I'd imagine it's probably like, as I said, Ramsey's been our boo boy at times, and Ozil's been our boo boy at times, and many others. Giroud had his period. And I don't know. I can't remember if they got the same. I remember like I've seen Arsenal fans like laughing about Ramsey's leg break, because obviously he had a period where he was bad. But again, it's not as bad as a death threat, but it's a joke. And I think I would imagine most of the people done it anonymously, like they hid behind an account and they just think they're being big, brave and clever. But I mean, it's a cowardly thing to do anyway, and it's just embarrassing. Like, I'm assuming they're probably grown men. Like, if you're 30, 40, even 20 years old, sitting at home, anonymously writing death threats to an athlete because he didn't have a good day at work, I'm embarrassed for you. I'm actually embarrassed for you.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. For me, it's not on as a fan. Like, we get on this podcast and we're on Twitter and the blog and it. Be fucking critical of a player. That's fine, because as a fan, look, you know, we offer our views but to a point where you're sitting behind a keyboard, you know, fucking death threats to a player. My blood was boiling. I wouldn't, and yes, I'm a Shaka fan, but I wouldn't care if it's El Neni, Iwobi, any player who plays for Arsenal. In fact, any player who plays for anybody. It for me, it's you're not a fan if you're going to sit
except
there and fucking.
Ali.
Who?
Dele Alli. Oh, I'm joking. Don't send him death threats. Just call him a cunt.
Yeah. But you know, it's just fuck. It is fuck. Schwinn, you got any add on that, mate?
Just to echo what you guys said, I mean, it's disgraceful, you know. It should not be a part of football. This is bigger than just our club, because it happens pretty much across all fan bases. And, you know, it's not something that I really think too much about, because it doesn't happen that often at our club, especially taking it as far as death threats. But again, I've said this before, Victoria Concordia Crescent, victory through harmony. You know, I mean, we are no one if we don't hold true to our traditions and to our ethos. And I understand the frustration, and I understand that Xhaka has not been the player that we expected. But we have to be patient. We have to be, I mean, we have to be forgiving, you know. It's not up to everyone's level at times, and he might not be the solution that we've all been shouting for. But that's not his mistake, you know. While he's at the club, we should do all we can to, as you said, give him some constructive criticism. Even if that means, you know, just us shouting into a void, which is pretty much what we do with our podcast, and that's what every podcasting group does out there. No, players don't usually listen to these podcasts, obviously, but to escalate it to that level is just unwarranted, and it's dangerous, because it's just so dangerous to take it up that notch. It's got no place in the game, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was pretty fucking pissed off and upset when I heard it, but I'm just going to echo Gimli from a Bergkamp Wonderland. I'm thinking, mate, it's probably Arsenal Nexus on a couple of fake accounts. There'd be blokes like him fucking doing it, you know. There's a few people saying that we should have another defensive midfielder while we're talking Xhaka. So you've probably seen a few people talking about it, mate. And what's your take on it?
In an ideal world, I've commented on this before, that in an ideal world, we would have a defensive midfielder. However, I think it's a very, very hard position to play for Arsenal, because we are an attacking-based unit. So there's very good defensive midfielders out there that probably aren't so great on the ball. There's players that are like Xhaka that are genuine. I know he's had his moments, but he's generally quite good on the ball, but lacks a bit defensively. I asked this to you guys before, and no one could really put a name out there as someone who could do both. And I think in this Arsenal team, that's what you need. You could argue that the team's set up wrong, and we should be in a system where we have someone that is just a pure defensive midfielder. But in the way this team is set up in that system, you do need someone that can do both. And as I said, I've yet to see a decent suggestion. So a lot of people recently, and it literally boggles my mind, have been saying that Kolasinac should be given the game there. These are the same people that regularly tell me Wenger plays players out of position and that Wenger's clueless because he does it. For me, I don't see any skill set that Kolasinac has that could lead to him playing as a defensive midfielder, apart from he's quite big. Oh, he's very big in terms of size. He's not big in terms of height, so aerially, I don't think he'd be an animal in terms of he'd win every header. The amount of times a player gets shoulder to shoulder is very, very little. Like, I couldn't name you three times this season where Granit Xhaka's been barged off the ball. So if you give him that extra strength that Kolasinac has, if you play Kolasinac there and you give him that size, it doesn't come into effect. His passing range isn't good enough. He's not quick enough. And there's another criticism of Xhaka as well, to be fair. He's not quick enough mentally when he receives the ball. So, like, you can see that when Kolasinac is playing on the wing. There's a reason that Monreal's keeping out of the team. Don't get me wrong, Monreal's a brilliant player. But if Kolasinac was all that everyone seems to think he is, there wouldn't even be competition. And one of the worst things, most people I'm assuming would agree that the worst thing about Kolasinac's game since he's been at Arsenal has been the defensive side of it. Suddenly you want him to play in a pivotal defensive position? Not for me.
Yeah. Got to remember, though, didn't he win the award for the in the Bundesliga Player of the Year?
Left-back.
Left-back, okay.
He got left-back in the team of the year.
Yeah, okay. So left-back's his position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. You had any dad on that, Schwinn?
No, just that Arsene's not going to sign one. I mean, I think if he had to, he would have signed a through and through defensive midfielder a while ago. I mean, he's tried a few different sorts of players in there. Alex Song, arguably the most defensive of the lot in recent memory. But even Alex Song would, you know, go on an adventure. Francis Coquelin, again, Arsene said once that I've asked him to go further forward and break up play higher up the field. So we will never have, under Arsene Wenger, a traditional number six who sits between the defenders and is just there to do defensive work. He likes those deep playmaking midfielders, and that's what Granit Xhaka is. And to be fair to him, for all his flaws that have been very abundant this season, he was excellent yesterday. I mean, I cannot echo this anymore, because he was so disciplined. He was very confident in the ball, quick to move the ball. He was aware of who was around him, and you know he would move the ball in the right place almost all the time. He was very, very disciplined yesterday, even as we moved up the field, and very comforting to watch. I mean, that's something for him to build upon. I think yesterday was a perfect template for that. I mean, there's no denying that Everton are struggling right now, but these are the games that, you know, you need to take advantage of in terms of building for the near future, you know, for the next week. And with the Scum up, with us playing the Scum next week, this is a fabulous way for Granit Xhaka to build upon his positioning. And I think we can expect some good things from him next week.
I've heard a lot of people say today, you know, like it was only Everton, you know, whoopee-doo, you just beat Everton 5-1, who fucking cares? Keep it in mind, boys, who'd we lose last week? Swansea? 3-1?
Yeah.
So, Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, they're the only two, like, okay, great fucking players and had a brilliant game. But a 5-goal difference between this week and last week, yeah. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's not only Everton. It doesn't matter who play in the Premier League.
you can only beat what's in front of you. And this season, Everton have taken points off City, one of only four teams to do so, and Chelsea. So, you may see it as it's only Everton and not playing well, but you still got to go and beat them. And other teams have struggled to do that. And other good teams have struggled to do that. So, as I said, you still have to go and do it. I get what people are saying, oh, it's only Everton, but you still have to beat the only Everton. It was only Swansea we lost to them. It was only West Brom that we dropped points to. It was only Bournemouth that we lost to. You could put only in front of a lot of the teams we've dropped points against, and we rightly got criticised for doing so. So when you beat one of them, you can't just go, oh, well, yeah, it was obvious, because it wasn't.
Yeah, so just getting back on to the game yesterday, Tony, apparently there was a protest scheduled. Did it take place?
I'm very glad you said schedule. So I believe about 14 people turned up and it pretty much got cancelled. They didn't walk to the ground or march to the ground, whatever phrase you want to call it. There's a picture going around social media, pretty much just an empty road where the protest was due to be. A lot of people, even a lot of people that are staunch Wenger out and have been on previous protests, didn't go because, and I agree with them, whether they're Wenger out or not, or what their views are, that it's all about timing. And at the moment, we've just got to a cup final. We were on a bit of a, I know we had a poor result midweek, but we were on a bit of a high because we'd made some signings, and the timing was terrible to bring sort of negativity on the club. So even a lot of, as I said, Wenger outs that have been on previous protests weren't interested in going, and fair play to them for that, because it shows that they're putting the club first in a sense. Whereas I think the people that have planned this protest seem to just be doing it for their own, not their own gain, but sort of to be known, we're the guys that protest regardless. But for me, I don't want to tell anyone they're not a fan, but for me, the club comes first. And you can still put the club first and protest when the time's right, but when everyone's on a high like they were before the game yesterday, why try and bring it down? What are you gaining? I you're trying to take all the attention off the new signings, the little bit of positivity we have at the moment. And it just doesn't make sense to me. So fair play for people not going, but the people I never thought I'd praise, a fair play to the people that usually go but didn't yesterday because they recognise that the timing made it nothing about the club and all about the people that were marching.
If, let's say, look, and you've had a fair idea, well, not idea, but you've said here on the podcast a few times that you've got this niggling feeling in your back that this is Wenger's last year. You keep up results like that yesterday, 5-1 against Everton. Fast forward to next season. You want Wenger still being a part of managing this team?
I've wanted change for, and I may have been proved wrong, but I wanted change for about 3 years, even regardless of the FA Cup. Just not the sense of entitlement that people keep claiming we have. I just feel everything's very stale at Arsenal. And maybe that's somewhat changing with the people going out, that he's dropping. He seems to, whether it's him or someone else, they've got away with tradition where people aren't staying, like the people like Walcott aren't there just because they've been there and they're part of the furniture. He's got rid of them type of players. But I just feel everything's stale. Everyone knows their role. They know what they can get away with. It's like the way I try and compare it to everyday life is when you've got a new job, you're sort of on your toes because you don't know. You don't know how your manager is. You don't know what your bosses are like. Blah, blah, blah. After you've been there 6 months, you know what you can get away with. You know that if I come in 10 minutes late on Wednesday, it's fine because the boss doesn't come in till 9:30 or whatever. And I think it's like that times 100 at Arsenal because Wenger's been there so long. So all of the players know exactly what they can get away with, where they can shy away. And they're not going to get, as Fergie called it, the hairdryer treatment. So I want change for that reason. And in even the wins in the FA Cup, even after we beat Chelsea in the final, obviously the whole Wenger contract thing was due to be sorted out with the next day or 2 days after, I still wanted change just because that staleness for me doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm. So even with a couple of these, with a new scout, Wenger hadn't, and obviously didn't have much to do with the transfers in January. Because it was left to the new guys. If Arsenal, you know, say basically, mate, your job is to manage this team, let us do back of house stuff. What is that a change? Is that change enough for you?
For me, no, because the player it's the players that are stale. Look, none of us really moan about when Wenger gets blamed for stuff. It's very rare, it does happen, but it's very rare that the stuff he's getting blamed for is the behind the scenes stuff. It's mainly for results and attitudes on the pitch. I do think he lets the players get away with too much. He is like a father figure and isn't stern enough with them. So for me, it's irrespective of the backroom changes. If suddenly when a player didn't perform, he started putting a rocket up their arse, so to speak, again, that's more of a change I'd like to see. But he's never going to do that. He's managed this way. I mean, 20-plus years at Arsenal, and I don't know much about how he managed at Grand Passé, but I'd imagine it was exactly the same. And it's just his style. And I think that can work. But when you've been in the same place for 20-odd years, it just gets stale.
So you want a Jose Mourinho style?
Not even a Mourinho, but there's, look, I like, in a way, Wenger's style of being positive towards the players. But and I'm not picking on Alex Iwobi, but it's just a situation that's happened recently. Mm. I think he's started every game since he was caught going out and breaking club rules.
Yeah.
Whether he got fined or not, which never actually came out, they said if it did happen, which we all know it did, we're going to have to fine him. Whether he got fined or not, that is not punishment enough for clearly breaking a club rule. Yeah. And again, I'm not picking on Iwobi. It just happens to have been here. So that's where, as I said, it's stale. That Iwobi knows now that he can go out two nights before, break the club rule, and play every game since.
Mm-hmm. It's
no discipline. No. As I said, it's just too stale. They know what they can get away with. They know where they can let rules slide and where they have to show to be doing the right thing.
Same question to you, Schwinn. Results at the end of the season. Wenger, you want him to stay on next season? If you know, and I'm crowing early, like a 5-1 is one game, so don't get me wrong, I am aware of that. But let's hypothetically say we continue this form with these couple of new signings that we've got over January till the end of this season. What's your thoughts for next season?
Look, I mean, I said maybe during one of my very initial recordings with you guys that I think Arsene Wenger looks out of it. There was a post-match interview early on this season where I mean, it just looked as if he was done and dusted. He looked very, very dejected, and he looked frustrated after the game. And to me, it screamed out that he's going to be gone at the end of the season. But irrespective of current form, I think he's going to stick around. I think he sees something here. And to your point, Tez, as you said before we started recording today, that he looked happy. I mean, apart from the celebrations and the constant smile on his face, I remember a distinct moment where the ball went into touch close to Arsene Wenger, and he had a couple of juggles before, you know, kicking the ball back into an Everton player's hands. I mean, it's those things that sort of give you insight into how and what the manager is feeling. And I think these two signings are very, very positive, and they will propel Arsene Wenger to stick on, because let's not forget that he's not out of contract if he would be going. It's either because of something mutually agreed beforehand or if it's completely down to him.
I just wonder, and we spoke about it before we started recording, how much pressure did Sanchez and did Wenger feel, how much pressure for not having him signed a new contract and the disruption apparently that and me and you spoke about it, that David Ornstein spoke about it on Arseblog, that there was a disruption obviously with Sanchez in the dressing room with players, and I just wonder how much of that affected Wenger.
Massively.
Just to go back to my point, sorry to butt in, would that have happened in an Alex Ferguson dressing room?
I mean, that's just difference in style of management, though, isn't it? I mean, no arguments. I think you're exactly right. Or even a Jose Mourinho or even a Pep Guardiola. That wouldn't happen. Wenger is the professor in that regard. And we can debate whether that's the right way of managing or not. But since that is his way of managing, there's really no point making bones about it. And we just have to see how things might turn out. But no, it's not just Alexis Sanchez, I would say. Even Mesut Ozil. I mean, it's not losing their quality. It's losing what they mean to the club, the best players. That damage would be irreparable under Arsene Wenger, because any prospective player that wants to join the club will always think and maybe consult Ozil and Sanchez that, why did you boys actually leave? And that would have tarnished the image of the club when it came to the transfer market. I mean, showing that we've signed Mesut Ozil to an enormous wage packet screams intent, but it also screams to other prospective players that, you know what, we're not as down and out as people make us out to be. We've shown intent. We've gone and brought in two world-class players in a time when we usually don't make signings, and we'll live on. It's Arsenal Football Club, and we can replace whoever leaves us. So I mean, I think we can all question how he manages his players and whether that's the right way or not. But I think he'll stick on. I think he's landed himself into a position where he sees prowess in this team, and he loves the sport and he loves the club. I don't see a reason specifically for him to leave, unless we bottle the season completely, including the Europa League. But that's something only time will tell.
Tony, you brought up an interesting point, and I assume where you're heading with it. I wonder, Ozil signing a new contract, what play that had, whether it was going to be Wenger at the end of the next season, or because he signed to, what, 2021. So, obviously, I wonder if a player thinks, are you going to be sticking around, boss, or are you moving on, or are we going to have somebody new in the club?
It is an interesting one, because we all know that Mesut Ozil is a huge Arsene Wenger fan, like massive. In people, look, you can clearly hear by what I've just said that I don't want Wenger to be Arsenal manager anymore, but people that really dislike Wenger and will deny the fact that Ozil only signed for us because Wenger was manager, I 100% believe that to be true. I think with any other manager, well, not any other, but the majority of other managers, Ozil would not have signed for Arsenal. So has he got a heads up that Wenger's still going to be manager next year when he signed that contract? But the other thing about that is, if he has got that heads up, and I'm not saying he has or hasn't, I don't have a clue, but then Wenger's only got another year after that, so that would still leave Ozil with 2 years with someone new, unless they're planning on giving Wenger another extension, which would absolutely astound me. So I don't think the management has played a part in Ozil signing this contract. I may be wrong, but I would be surprised, because as I said, in that case, you'd think Ozil would only want a 1 year extension, because he's saying, well, if I only want to play for this manager, then I need guarantees about his future before I make guarantees about my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, and I suppose time will tell, boys. Well, let's get on to a couple of questions that we've got from our followers and listeners on our Twitter account at @clocken_talk. So Schwinn Tommy asks, where's that Asian dude who signed for us, then went on loan last transfer window? If you do find him, send check there.
I think he's talking about Takuma Asano, who we signed, who's Japanese, and we signed a couple of years ago at a very tender age. I think he's on loan at Stuttgart, if I'm not wrong, and I remember checking up on him a few weeks, maybe a month or two ago, and he didn't really stand out. He had a couple of goals, maybe an assist or two, but yeah, check is not exactly at his finest level, I would say, right now. But again, he's not priority one for me. He made a few mistakes, you know, against Swansea, and he was stitched up. And yesterday he was okay, you know, could have probably saved that goal, but maybe he was struggling a bit from that injury. Again, I've not come out of Arsenal games many times where I've thought Cech was the problem. You know, it's the defensive unit, as we've spoken about extensively, that collectively we're not set up to defend, as opposed to Cech's time at Chelsea, where the defense was very deep and would bail him out quite often. So yes, Cech is getting up there, and you know, recently we've seen reports about how Raul Sanjehi wants to make Jan Oblak his number one target for the summer, which I think all of us would welcome. But I don't think Cech's finished. I think he's getting up there, and maybe after the next season we could see him finally hanging up his boots. But it's a team sport, and as a unit, we need to save Cech. He needs to bail us out a lot of times, but at the same time, he needs protection, and we could do better in giving him that protection. There's no doubt about that.
P18, Tony, and we just touched on it, basically. Wenger has said that he'll honour his contract, but there are many rumours saying he will leave at the end of the season. Look, I personally think he'll stay. Tony's said plenty of times on this podcast he thinks he will leave. Schwinn, stay or leave? You said he will stay, didn't you, mate?
Yeah, so, yeah, he'll stay.
Yeah, yeah. So he's also asked a couple more questions. So, Tony, how many players are we after for the summer, and what positions?
And then he said, then the third question, would we realistically pay $80 million for Oblak?
I'm glad, because this brings me on to Shrin's point. First of all, we're definitely looking at a centre-back, as Wenger said himself, and as we tried to sign in January. There's been a lot linking us with a holding midfielder, but that, if that is done, it will be done, I don't want to say above Wenger's head, but it will be someone identified by Sven or by Raul, and I guess signed with Wenger's blessing, but not his first choice, as we discussed earlier, just because of our system, a defensive midfielder doesn't work. Also depends on who we lose as well. So there's them two, and then obviously there's a keeper. Oblak has a release clause of $80 million. I can't see any reason Atletico Madrid would want to get rid of him for less than the release clause, and I highly, highly doubt that we would pay the release clause. In fact, I'm almost certain. And also, PSG need a keeper, so we can't compete there. I'd be amazed. Look, I rate Oblak very highly. I'd probably put him in the top five in the world, but I'd be absolutely amazed if we signed him, even if we attempted to, because as I said, we know we're going to get beat out of the water before we start. I've said, not on here, well, actually I may have said it on here, but I've definitely been saying it on Twitter for months, I still think Timo Horn's going to be the first choice in keepers we try and sign, due to the money. It's an improvement and it wouldn't cost much. Obviously we've looked at Butland.
What about Pickford? So,
nah, he's just got, I said this, I think it was on the podcast last week, he's just signed for $30 million. He's supposedly having a good year. To be honest, I think he gets away with murder in terms of criticism, because again, everyone wants him to be good. But he's just signed for $30 million. He's reportedly having a good year. So what does that make him worth? 40, 50 million? And yeah. he's nowhere near that. So I think it'll be Horn will be number one choice. Butland is on the list. There's a couple of other names on the list that I can't think of off the top of my head. I think if someone asked me to put money on it now, or if someone said, here's £10, go and put it on who you think Arsenal will sign and goal in the summer, I would put it on Timo Horn.
And still on the same subject, scratch everything from what's previously happened over the last transfer windows. Do you think this window we seem to be more ruthless in dealing with negotiations? Like Dick Law's gone, we've got Rules, this Sven got, what is it, Diamond Eye? Maybe $80 million might be something that Arsenal will pay.
Well, I don't think the club will spend it. I don't think it's anything to do with them and their jobs. I don't think the club will release them funds. Unless we sell big. But then if you sell big, look, I've stated on here before, and I still think Ramsey will go in the summer. And you'd probably be looking, with a year left, you'd probably get maybe $50 million to him. If you sell him abroad, you'd probably get a bit less. So, I mean, even if you're working on $50 million, but then you've got to replace Ramsey, which was going to cost a lot of money. So then you can't just say, oh, we've got $50 million here and say we had a $50 million budget, for example. You can't say, oh, we'll go and spend $80 million on a keeper, because then you're leaving yourself $20 million to replace Ramsey and get a centre back. So I don't think, and I mean, it's difficult to say, have they been ruthless? I think what they have done is they've tapped up better, because they knew early on that the Aubameyang actual agreement with Aubameyang was done ages ago in terms of with the player. And again, we know it's illegal, but it happens in every single transfer. So, and I would imagine that's the Barcelona effect, and by that, the Raul effect. That Barcelona are expert at tapping up players. We see it time and time again, us more to the detriment of most other teams, but Liverpool have seen it very recently. And so if you could call that ruthless, we've been more ruthless in that sense, but I don't think anything else was really done differently.
Okay.
Just before we move ahead, sorry, Tez,
yeah,
but Tony, when you say that, you know, we'll probably get in a defensive midfielder with Arsene's blessing, do you think this is going to be someone who's a prospect, who Sven has identified, or will it be someone who's more proven and, you know, maybe someone who can slot in into the team?
If someone had a gun to my head and said, what do you think they'll do? I would go with not a complete prospect, not like the Greek boy, but Sven loves these kind of players, and it's shown time and time again that they're around the sort of 10, 15 million pound mark, which is obviously a lot of money, but in this market, it's not a lot of money. And it'll be a bit, maybe play a bit more than Coughlin, sort of like play the amount that Elneny's played in recent weeks, where you play some games, you slot in here and there, but with the potential to improve and become some, because this Arsenal team, especially if it is under Wenger, isn't going to play an out-and-out defensive midfielder every week. The last time they've done that was probably Gilberto Silva, where he said you can just stay there and play and be it if you don't need to get forward. And even in Gilberto's last year, I think he was our top scorer. So it shows that even the best out-and-out defensive midfielder we've had in a long, long time was still allowed to go forward. So I don't see the point in, and I don't think it's very likely that they'll go out and spend big money on someone who is just not going to be either used correctly or not going to play every week. And as I said, it would still be very difficult. I mean, I know some people have mentioned Ndonzi, but they're not going to pay 40 million for him and he's not going to play every week.
What about someone like Fabinho, who's a want-away player and we know he can play in that position? I don't know how good he is in terms of playing the ball, but in terms of his defensive capabilities, he's probably up there, isn't he?
See, one of our followers asked me this question during the transfer window, and he'd be one I'd be very interested in because not only is he very good, he can play football. He's also played as much at right back as he has at defensive midfield. And
that's right.
Lord knows we're slacking as a, I don't rate Bellerin, but regardless of that, if Bellerin's out, at the moment we have no second choice, right? A proper right back. You can go, Chambers can play there. Reece Nelson, I mean, I don't think he can, but some would say can play there. We don't have anyone who that is their position. So if you, I mean, I don't think it'd be possible because I think there'd be a lot of bigger clubs that spend more money in for him. But I would recommend Fabinho, as I said, just because he could cover both positions.
Okay. What's this? When we linked, and you're talking about Ramsey, you think you might go in the summer. Malcolm, we seem linked heavily to him in the January window.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, the disagreement was that they wanted him to keep him. Apparently, Gus Poyet, who's now their manager, said when he got interviewed for the job, the first question he asked is, will we be keeping Malcolm? And they said yes. And apparently he said if they had said no, he would have just walked out of the interview. So it was never an option that they were going to sell him in January, if you believe what he said. He will go somewhere in the summer. At the moment, we're probably in pole position. Does that mean anything? No. You never know if he scores 10 goals between now and the end of the season, gets in the World Cup squad. The transfer fee rises massively and then suddenly it might not be worth it, so to speak, or they might not see it as worth it. I'd be very surprised if we don't try and sign him on the pre-pod, agree a deal very soon to sign him in the summer. I'd be surprised if they're not negotiating now, to be honest.
Okay. P18 and at Red Lacazette 9 is his tag thing. He also says, we have £220 million plus cash reserve. Is it possible that we'll spend however much we want? We all know Kroenke is a stingy fuck. So how do you see this going, Tony?
No club, no business, no nothing ever spends everything they have in the bank. It doesn't make any business sense. And then you think, if there is that 220 million, then they've got to pay wages and whatnot. It's like, could you imagine Arsenal having a bank account of zero?
Mm.
Which is what they're saying. It will never happen.
Why not?
In the same way, United wouldn't let it happen, or City wouldn't let it happen. But I mean, it's different with City because they've got an owner who's got a bottomless pit of money. But no business, if you think of a rational business, which is kind of what Arsenal are run like, annoyingly, but Arsenal are run like a normal, everyday business. They wouldn't have their bank account at zero. They've got to allow for something at all times. So we're not just going to go out and spend £220 million, especially not without bringing anything in from player sales. I mean, what's our record window? About £110 million, I think, off the top of my head. I've literally done no research into that, so I could be wildly wrong, but off the top of my head, I think it's around that. There was player sales involved in that as well. I don't think that was 100 plus million net spend. So So to suddenly think we're going to have a $220 million net spend, for me, it's just ludicrous. But
I'll use the analogy of Apple. Have a look how much cash reserve Apple's got. You see them going to buy Spotify? No. Why? Because they're a business and they're not going to spend every single bit of cash reserve to compete with other companies.
Exactly.
Okay, boys. MAA Gunner. Schwinn, who is your biggest cult hero of the Emirates era?
Oh, wow. Straight away, Andre R. Chauvin comes to mind. I mean, he never – I know everyone's going to come at me and say that he never, you know, delivered as what was expected. He was a record signing, I believe, when we signed him in January. But for me, he was always a favorite. You know, you take a liking to certain players despite their flaws or despite how good they are at times. But for me, Andre R. Chauvin, and for me, his standout moment would be that winner he scored against Barcelona. I mean, we all remember that game where Jack stood out and was, you know, miles ahead of anyone on that pitch that day. But I still remember that the commentary that flowed during that moment. And I remember, I think it was Martin Tyler, maybe, who said that it was a Barcelona goal from Arsenal. And at that point, you know, Barcelona was the peak and the zenith of football, club football. So it was such a flattering moment, excuse me, and to one up Pep Guardiola's Barcelona on that night was a special, special day. So for me, it has to be Andre R. Chauvin.
Okay. Tony?
I'm going to get absolutely hammered for this. First of all, I think the question is geared with having Ozil as the answer. I think that's what NAA Gunner expected, but I'm not going to go down that route. For me, a cult hero is probably someone that's never had the fans on their back. Like, they've been on, like, the fans have loved them all times. So for that reason, I wouldn't say Chauvin or Ozil or many of the others. And yeah, I know I'm going to get hammered for this, but the only player I could think of who fans have never been on their back is Jack. And again,
I knew you'd say that.
No, I don't see him as a cult hero. I don't really see him as a cult hero, but he's never ever got criticism from, especially the match going fans. You see a bit on Twitter more to do with his injury record, but match going fans, I've never heard Jack booed. I've never heard, like, he could give away 10 balls in a row and people still don't groan. Whereas other players, like, they've all had their time where people have moaned at them. So for me, if you're asking for a cult hero, I'm not saying he's the best player, and I'm not saying that by a long way. And obviously with Schwinn's answer, he's not saying Chauvin's the best player. But in terms of cult hero, the ones that the fans love the most, I would have to say Jack.
Mm. But by that logic, what about Rosicki?
Yeah, he's up there. I would say Jack gets more love, but in the same school of thought, Rosicki would be in my top three if I'm going down that train of thought.
Who's the third one you're thinking of?
I don't know, but I didn't want to say second, and then you say, what about?
Well, I'm going to throw in Aaron Ramsey. I know he cops a bit of slack, but
good, you know, shout.
Most goals, good shout. Most goals in the current squad, and what, most appearances as well in the current squad. So,
potentially.
Yeah.
Koscielny might edge that in terms of appearances. I'm not quite sure.
That would be my guess, to be honest.
Okay, thank you for that. That's a good question. Now, boys, tough one from MAA Gunner. Tony, how should we set up against the Spurs?
So what I would do, and I personally what I think Wenger will do as well, is keep the back four, fitness allowing. I'm assuming Cech's going to be in goal, but obviously that doesn't really matter towards the setup. I think he'll go a flat three in midfield with Ramsey, Jack and Xhaka. And then he'll play Ozil and Mickey behind Aubameyang. That's what I would do. It packs the midfield then. You leave you with vicious pace on the break. And also two players with an eye for a through ball, an eye for a pass. And also you leave yourself with Ramsey's late runs. Jack can link the play. So that's how I would set up. And I'd be very surprised if it's not how Wenger sets up.
Now, Wobi had a good game. Do you leave a Wobi there or do you let Lacazette have a go?
I wouldn't play either of them.
Okay. Schwinn?
I hope Tony's right, because I think all of us want to see Jack in the team that played yesterday. I think it will be for as good as the game he had. I think Jack still improves the team. So I hope Tony's right, but I do fear that we'll see the exact same lineup and with it will be starting just because of his pressing ability. And we all know Wenger loves his work rate. So I fear that it's going to be Alex Iwobi who gets the nod ahead of Jack Wilshere.
I think that's why it'll go too. When you win a game 5-1, I don't think you can see him changing a team, surely. A winning formula. Could be wrong.
Yeah, but it's a good headache to have, as we've spoken about. You know, we've got some good quality depth in our squad now. So if Jack is suffering from that bout of illness, and if Wenger is unsure if Jack's going to be 100%, it's not the worst, you know, move to make, but we all want to see Jack in that team. I think Wenger will also be wary about the fact that players like Dele Alli and Eric Dier are probably going to nibble at Jack's heels. And despite Jack being able to take some of those challenges in the last few months, a derby like that will always be escalated, and any challenge will be five times as worse as, you know, other challenges during other Premier League games. So Arsene might be a little wary of that as well. But I do hope we see Jack in that team, because I think he was the only missing piece from that squad yesterday. So to see him in that North London derby in that team would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It would, sure would be. But I just Iwobi for me, he had a good game, so I can't take Iwobi off.
For me, it's nothing against Iwobi. It's that if we play two in the middle, we're going to be outnumbered massively. I think Wenger's shown that he's willing to go more cautious against the bigger teams this year, and by putting three in the middle, it packs the midfield.
Okay. We'll see. The Texas Gooner, Schwinn, can the likes of Ozil, Iwobi, Mkhitaryan playing behind Aubameyang or Lacazette be the key potential unleashing Ramsey and getting more output from him and on consistency basis? Definitely work to perfection on the day.
Yeah, he's just answered his own question. I think he's absolutely spot on. Having this setup definitely frees up Ramsey. And we've spoken time and again about how his late runs are so dynamic and so accurate. And I think one of the problems we saw with Lacazette in the team was that at times Aaron Ramsey was the only one in the box with those late runs. And that would, you know, that would attract a defender to mark him or a defender to cover space better. When Lacazette was in the box, then Aaron Ramsey was still effective. And I think that's one of the reasons he was our standout player, along with, you know, Nacho Monreal deserves a shout here. But during the first half of the season, Aaron Ramsey was probably our best player. And I think the Texas Gooner has this spot on. If Aubameyang continues to cover the space that he has been covering in the box, and if we continue to see Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil, and you throw in Iwobi and Jack Wilshere in there, if they continue to create those triangles and have those, you know, fluid movements near the edge of the box, then Aaron Ramsey will find himself in a lot of space when it comes to crossing and when it comes to those second chances. So I think he's absolutely spot on with that.
Tony, Savvy's thrown one at, and we've just had this headache ourselves. A really good performance yesterday, but I really don't see Iwobi starting every game. So which formation is here to stay, 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, considering we have Wilshere Laka on the bench? Also, do you really think we can fit Laka, Aubameyang, Ozil, Mkhitaryan in the same 11?
So I think the shape will be changed depending on opponent. As I said, I think we'll go over flat three in the midfield against Tottenham, against any team that try and either are seen as a good side or try and pack the midfield. I think we'll go with three in the middle. So I think in the cup final, we'll probably go three in the middle. We've got City 4 days after the cup final. We'll go over flat three in the middle, I'd imagine. But then against the lesser teams, then you go 4-2-3-1, and that's probably where Iwobi is more likely to find a place in the side. In terms of can we fit them all in, the answer, and Wenger said it in his press conference, you don't have to. Regardless of what you think of Lacazette or anyone else, he's not done it for me, and I think I'd hope most would agree. Lacazette's not been done enough for me to say he has to be in the team. Others may disagree. So why are you trying to shoehorn him into a place in the team when he's not? It's not been earned. And again, Wenger's just going to get the criticism of square pegs in round holes if he does try and fit him in somewhere. He's not, I've said this before, he's not good enough to change the system for. So if Wenger wants to play a 4-2-3-1, Lacazette is not good enough for us to go, actually, we have to play two up front because we can't leave this guy out. Well, he may be good enough. He hasn't shown so far that he is good enough to make us change the plans to fit around him.
And I said it to you at the start when we were recording, I think it comes with his price tag though, doesn't it? It's hard to leave a bloke with that price tag sitting on the bench.
Look, yeah, it is difficult, but his price tag isn't the one on the pitch. He's not. Look, the question is, and is he performing like a £52 million striker? And I emphasise the word striker because he is a good player. Has he performed as a good striker? For me, no. He's got an average of, I think, 1 in 3, which I think it's 8 in 24, I think. So you cross that over the season, that's 13 Premier, less than, that's 12 point something league goals. That is not a £52 million striker. I agree he's a good player. I don't agree that he's a top draw striker.
Okay. Well, let's pump through these boys because we've got a few here. Schwinn Vish says, why are we unable to replicate our home form in away matches as a light? Everybody is after last night's performance. Be prepared for a rude orc awakening when we visit Tottenham next week.
It's a tough question, and it's a good one because our away form has been in the dumps. I mean, you know, we've been absolutely abysmal away from home, and it is a strange one because there have been times when we've performed really well at home, and then the very next game, which has been away from home, has been shambled. So to answer that is really hard, if I'm honest. I don't know if there's a single answer to that, and
I'm going to step in and say I'm blaming everything on Sanchez.
Yeah, but, I mean, Swansea, what do you blame that on, you know? I agree, Sanchez has been a distraction, and at home and away, you know, our home form hasn't been that great either this season, but that's sort of gone unnoticed because we've, you know, it's been okay. But our away form has been vividly very poor. So it is a tough question, but in terms of a rude awakening against Tottenham, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, if you ask me, this game was the perfect template to get some momentum for our next game, and we saw some bright things from yesterday's result and yesterday's performance. Having said that, Tottenham's game against Man United, albeit a win for them, wasn't necessarily great. You know, they got 2-1 really early goal, and the second one was a lucky own goal. They are a strong team, and every derby, irrespective of form, will always be full throttle. But I wouldn't count us out. I mean, it seems like Vish is almost, you know, certain that we're going to lose. But I mean, it's Wembley. Their pressing game doesn't work well at Wembley, and we are very good at Wembley. I fancy us for a positive result. I would go as far as to say we'll win the game 3-1. So there's my prediction already.
I'd like to know how a couple of players who have just come into the squad, like an Aubameyang and a Mkhitaryan, how do they actually prepare for a derby? Because, like, you know Jack Wilshere, it bleeds through his veins that, fuck, we're playing Tottenham this weekend, boys. You know, he'd be really talking them up. This is our derby match. You know, get involved here, lads. I wonder what it means to the new players coming in.
Well, I think you're right. Jack probably understands the weight of the North London derby more than these two new players do. But let's not forget that, you know, they've played in the Gelsenkirchen derby several times. Mkhitaryan played in the Manchester derby, of course, you know, wasn't the brightest, but they understand the weight of a derby. They may not understand the weight of the North London derby, but they understand it, you know, the weight that comes with local rivalries. So I don't think they'll be flabbergasted by the pace and the tempo and the intensity of the game, but I think they're so seasoned and so well educated when it comes to European football that it's not going to go remiss on them.
Tony Sam Spade, what's the latest Ramsey contract negotiations? Does it look like he will re-sign?
So I saw this question last night, and my answer would have been the same as it has been for recent weeks. We offered him a contract a while ago. As far as I'm aware, it's not been rejected. It's just not been accepted. It's just been pretty much ignored. I don't think they're at the negotiating table. I think there's just a contract on the table that no one's sitting at. Then this morning, reports have broke that, well, not really broke, but that he wants to play abroad at some point, which, and obviously now is an opportune time to do it with his contract running down. So I have said for a long time, I think he'll go in the summer, and I have nothing that changes my mind in that respect.
Okay. And still, we'll stick with you on this one again, mate. Tomic asks, do we know any summer transfer plans, incomings and outgoings?
So obviously we've pretty much covered that with keepers and defenders, and potentially Malcolm. I can't see anything beyond that.
It's very early stages, isn't it, really? Schwinn Cullum McKay says, with Aubameyang fitting in so well, how do you think Lacazette will have a future at this club? Maybe rotation or together or even as a second choice striker?
Rotation. I think, if anything, this first half of the season has shown that Lacazette is not quite up to the pace, as Tony also spoke about just a couple of questions ago.
It's a fucking dear striker to have as a fucking rotation, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been spoiled for choice all of a sudden. You know, for years we've been shouting out for a proven number nine or prospective number nine who has that quality. But now we suddenly have two. Of course, Lacazette has struggled in the first half of the season for a variety of reasons. But I think Arsene sees the Europa League as a great platform for him to build upon. He's played in that competition before, and the tempo and the style of play might suit him more out there. Also, he's young. Let's not forget that. So while Aubameyang is leading the line when it comes to the Premier League, you know, this will give him a great opportunity, Lacazette, a great opportunity to make himself bigger in terms of his size, more, you know, stronger, maybe work on his intelligence in terms of the right runs and whatnot. And competition, you know, competition is always good, especially when you're competing against someone like Aubameyang. So I think it's going to help him. I don't think we're going to sell him. I think any such suggestion is ludicrous. And, you know, you don't sell a £50 million investment off the back of one season. But it's only going to help him. And with Aubameyang being ineligible for the Europa League, he's definitely going to lead the line there. And if anything, people should be telling Lacazette that, look, this is not a demotion. You know, the Europa League is still a very important part of our season, and maybe further down the road, the most important part of our season. So he shouldn't take this as a demotion. If anything, he should take this as motivation to do well and secure that Champions League spot for us if the Premier League doesn't work out.
Hmm. What is it? If we're in Champions League, FA Cup, and that Energy Drink Cup, is it about 70-odd games if you go through, like I'm thinking next season? Is it about 70-odd games if you go deep into them competitions?
Last season, we didn't obviously go deep in the Champions League. We went out in the last 16, but obviously we won the FA Cup and got to we played three rounds in the Carabao. And I think we played 60 games.
Okay. So, yeah, so you'd definitely be getting a run there somewhere.
Well, it has to be. And yeah. I mean, just to sort of follow up with that, looking at Man City, they have Aguero and Jesus, and the only time we see both of those together is when they're, you know, when they have to sort of pull out a result because they're down a goal or they're, you know, level with their opposition and they just fling in on the body in for the last 10 minutes. We don't have to play both of those strikers together. And I think before these signings were made, we all thought that, you know, Arsene is going to try and squeeze all of them together. These four top, you know, four attackers together. But I think that seems very unlikely now, especially seeing our performance yesterday. We could be wrong. It could be that Lacazette is just getting a breather, which he has earned after a busy couple of months.
I think Lacazette would have come on yesterday had Cech not have gone off.
I agree, but I also think that would have been in place of Aubameyang. I don't think he would have partnered Aubameyang up top. So the prospects of seeing both of them together, I think, would be to bag a late goal, and that is very situational. But I don't think we'll see both of them together starting the lineup, barring injuries.
Okay, Tony, SFTS says, Tottenham away is the kind of game Jack is made for, but after today, Ramsey can't really be dropped. What's your resolution to this issue?
Great question. I answered it earlier with the, I think we'll go over flat three and play them both. If we play in the same system, then one of them can't play, essentially. And it's a difficult one. I don't want to get going on the Jack versus Ramsey debate again, because I think it's the most pointless debate on earth. We've got both of them, so it's not really an issue. But if we do stick with 4-2-3-1, it's a very difficult one. I would say the game is more suited to Jack, but you can't drop a guy that scored a hat-trick. And not, look, sometimes you can play not brilliantly and score a hat-trick. Ramsey was very, very good yesterday, as well as scoring a hat-trick. Ramsey would have still been good yesterday, even if had he only scored one. So it would be a very... If we were to play with the same system, I'd imagine he would keep Ramsey in. But I'm hoping, and I think, that he will change the system.
Look, up until yesterday's game, I felt Jack partnered better with Xhaka, more so than Ramsey earlier on in them earlier games. But then after yesterday's game, you type of going, well, Xhaka had a brilliant game. Ramsey had a great game. So it's bloody tough to call, isn't it?
I would agree that I think Jack suits Xhaka better. Look, some people will be sitting there listening to this saying, why don't we play them both? But it's way too open. There's no physicality. There's no size. And both, it kind of negates the strengths of especially Jack, that he's good sort of taking on players and creating space. But if he's the deepest midfielder, you don't want him taking them risks of taking on players, because if he loses the ball, then they're straight at our back four, which is usually a back two because the fullbacks are high up. So I wouldn't advocate, especially not against Tottenham, playing them both together. But I agree that usually I would say that Jack is a better partner to Granit Xhaka.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. But then yesterday, look, who knows? Okay, we've got one here from Zane Ali Schwinn, and he wanted more goals. Zane, you wanted more, mate. Five wasn't enough, because he says, what was the team talk for the second half against Everton? We could have embarrassed them more.
We certainly could have, but I think it was wise to, put the brakes on and just ease ourselves out of the game. The game was pretty much wrapped up after the first half, but considering we have Tottenham next week, I think it was wise to let the players take some time in just playing the ball around a little bit, frustrating Everton even more. I don't think we completely stopped scoring. I mean, Aaron Ramsey bagged his hat-trick in the second half, but I think we were just a little slow in terms of pushing bodies forward, and I think that was the right thing to do, because we've been accused of not securing our lead, and that's exactly what we did. Brings me back to Tony's point that there's no winning when it comes to any result. You know, Arsene Wenger and the players will get some sort of criticism despite such a good performance. And to Zane's point, I understand, you know, that it's always nice to see many more goals flying in, but I think it was the wise move at that point to just take it easy and ride the game out.
Stick with you, Schwinn, because Chris Pickley was really excited and encouraged by the win against Everton. We clearly have more offensive firepower, but I have really concerns about our defensive stability. What can we do to the existing lineup to make sure we don't have another defensive collapse like the Swansea game?
$1 million question, and I really don't have an answer. I'm excited to see what Tony has to say about it. But Chris, if you find an answer to that that works, make sure you write to Senior Wenger and let him know about it.
Got any thoughts on that, Tony?
Obviously, I've said I'd go over flat three in midfield against Tottenham because it gives you that much more protection. And I think Wenger does realise that. We went with a flat three against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup, both home and away. I think the issue comes with he knew Swansea were going to defend deep, so he didn't sort of deploy that system. It just wasn't that system. So I think I'm not saying it's going to make us completely defensively stable, but when we have played like that this year, we have been a lot more assured at the back. I know we conceded against Chelsea and we had a horrible start, but then they switched shapes and it worked. There's a few games. So I think that it's not the golden answer, but it will solve some issues or help solve some issues.
Okay. Tony Sally, do you think we can finish top four? And realistically, who would you want for Wenger's replacement, as if rumours of you going to leave at the end of the season?
I don't think we'll finish top four. Obviously, I want us to, but I don't think we will. I don't think we're consistent enough. Obviously, especially away from home, I think we leaked too many goals. I disagree with Schwinn's point earlier that we've not been good at home. I mean, we've only dropped points in three games. Tottenham were hailed as having the miraculous home season last year when they dropped 4 points. We've dropped seven because we've just lost that one extra. We drew with Liverpool and Chelsea. So I think this is our best home season we've had in a long, long time. But I just don't think we're consistent enough to get top four. In terms of manager, Allegri would be well worth a look. Proven winner. Yes, he's got the best team in the league. He doesn't seem to spend huge amounts of money. Net, he does. I mean, he spent a lot of money on Higuain, but net their spend doesn't tend to be huge. He's lost players like Pogba, Dani Alves, amongst others, and still continue to be competitive and winning their league and getting his club to Champions League finals. So I think he would be high up on the list. It's difficult because you look at people like Hardim at Monaco, and it sort of fits the model. He's done good with what he's got. He'd probably want out. But I don't know. Allegri's name holds a lot more, I don't know, respect than the other guys. I prefer Allegri to Ancelotti. So for me, my first choice would be Allegri. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that would be, if I had an open book and you can go and get someone who's realistic, it'd be Allegri.
Sticking with you, Tony, and Robert Brown says, how planned was it to get Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, or did it all just fall into place once Manchester pushed Alexis?
So Aubameyang we was looking at in the summer, and it was a choice between him and Lacazette was younger and cheaper. So they opted, I think the board were willing to release the money for him, but not Aubameyang pretty much. And then obviously, regardless of what you think of Lacazette, we've had a clear lack of goals. So when they've highlighted that they need a striker, especially to replace Alexis' goals, they've gone back in for who was a target in the summer. I don't want to say that was luck. In terms of Mkhitaryan, by all accounts, when United were interested in signing Alexis, Raiola came to Arsenal, and said that he thinks Mickey would be available. And obviously we've chased Mickey when he was at Dortmund. We lost out to Man United because they offered him much more money. So when they found that as a possibility, it was a player that had previously been wanted, and it became a possibility, so they've done it. So I don't think there was luck in either sense. It wasn't like forced upon them. They're both players they've looked at before and tried to sign before.
Mm-hmm. Mkhitaryan, we thought he was going to come last summer, didn't he?
So summer 2016. Yeah, I think the agreement was close to, not, look, I hate the word done, as everyone knows, but the agreement was, I think there was an agreement in place. But as I said, that agreement was bettered by
Manchester United. Okay, Schwinn, Donoghue Needham. Thanks for your question. It's refreshing to know now that Wenger has the headaches to select the team for the game opposing to the past. Us getting the headaches when we see which team he starts simply because we have a stronger squad now. Players now having to fight for their spot. It's more of a quote, I think, than a question. So I'd probably have to agree with it.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, it's just competition. I think that's what Donoghue is sort of talking about, and we've been screaming for it. I think there's still a couple of positions that where we need competition. Right back, of course, is something that stands out, and center back as well. So I think we can build on this. We've had a strong window, and we've had a strong result right after the window. So I think Donoghue is absolutely spot on.
Sticking with you, Schwinn, Glenn Baxter says, how is Wenger going to keep Aubameyang and Lacazette happy? Also, when does Iwobi take his place on the bench?
Wenger does not have to keep Aubameyang and Lacazette happy. You know, Lacazette and Aubameyang have to make sure that they're performing every time they're given a chance. It's not about the players. It's about the club. And I think Arsene understands that more than most. So if Lacazette does come knocking that, boss, what's going on? You know, I'm not getting any more minutes, then Wenger has good reason for that. And I think Lacazette understands that. And I don't think Lacazette will come knocking on the boss's door for that. So if you're performing and you're dropped, yes, we have a discussion that we can take. But I don't think Lacazette will complain too much, because he, I'm sure, recognizes that he hasn't been up to the mark. As for Alex Iwobi, Glenn, your guess is as good as mine, because we don't have white players, particularly in that position. Danny Welbeck's been struggling, but as I said, I'd rather have him stay away from the squad as far as possible. I think Iwobi was, you know, as we touched upon, was good yesterday, but I would rather see Jack Wilshere in there in a 4-3-3 system, as Tony spoke about. When that happens, I think after the Tottenham game, maybe, I think that's Östersund. So maybe the next one, I think the next Premier League game after Tottenham, we can expect Jack to feature in that team if he doesn't against Tottenham.
Tony, Dell Arsenal says, do you see Wenger partnering Lacazette and Aubameyang together in the team regular, if ever? He cannot be shooting a quality striker that Lacazette's confidence like that.
No, I don't see him partnering together. As I said earlier, I don't think Lacazette's good enough to change a shape for. He's not. If he was winning the league, like if he had 25 goals by now, we probably wouldn't have signed Aubameyang, if I'm honest. He, as I said, he's just not good enough to change the whole philosophy and ethos of the club. We haven't played two up front since 2004, probably. Is Lacazette good enough to change that? On his question, for me, no.
Okay. Look, we'll stick with you, Tony, for the last question. And I thank everybody for your questions, guys. We do our best to get through them all, so keep them rolling in. But this one just come in, and I just grabbed it off our Twitter because it was actually interesting. Something news now that we've been recording must be breaking about Ramsey, because Julius Hall has just said, I was thinking Mahrez will be the signing to replace Ramsey in the event that he was to leave. More important, is Wilshere going to sign?
I think Jack will. I've thought Jack will for a long time. There was reports breaking way too early that he'd signed the contract. I think I'd said the week before that they'd offered him one and that he rejected, but I think people were so expecting him to sign anything that was put in front of him that they just heard he'd been offered one and assume he's signed it. But as far as I know, there's been no contract signed. But I fully expect him to. In terms of Mahrez as a replacement for Ramsey, I don't think you could get two more different players, to be honest. Would I like Riyad Mahrez at Arsenal? Clearly, yes. Is he an alternative to Ramsey? Absolutely not.
Keeping in mind, Leicester City knocked back, I believe, a bit of around $60 million from Manchester City. So how much would Mahrez actually cost?
It will be cheaper in the summer if he stays on strike. Okay. He'll go for under 50. If he carries on behaving the way he is, he'll go for under 50 in the summer.
So the last two windows, he's put in a bloody get me out of here thing, hasn't he?
Transfer request, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Okay, guys, look, thank you everybody once again for your questions. And look, keep them rolling in. You can follow us on Twitter at @clockend_talk. Now, before we go, Tony, each and every week we're going to do a little trivia question at the end. And jump on our Twitter, and if you know the answer, don't fucking Google it, because I know you will. So don't be a fucking hero and get on the Google. @clockend_talk. Tony, what's this week's question, mate?
Yeah, so we'd noticed that when we put a few questions out, we're getting quite a lot of responses, so we thought we'd do one here. And this week's, obviously, we've just signed a new number 14. Some people think traditional number of a striking hero for this club. So, including Aubameyang, who are our last five number 14s?
Okay, so you can answer that @clockendtalk.
And thanks, Tony.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
No worries. We'll see you again next week. Thank you very much, Schwinn.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And to the haters out there on Shaka, go and get fucked, and we'll see you all next week.